What's up, Knoll Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear podcast back with a fully loaded episode for you. We got so much to talk about today. There's a lot going on. You know, welcome to the family, Clemson. Welcome to the dark side. They have
about time.
Clemson has entered the chat against the ACC, so that's something that we're going to cover too. Then we're going to talk about spring football kicked off yesterday, day one. Of course, it was just in shells, so there's not a whole lot that you can take away from it, but you got to see everybody going through football motions, so we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. And then, of course, Florida State baseball remains undefeated by just a slim margin. They squeaked by Stetson, but you know, maybe they were looking ahead a little bit to this massive matchup they have this weekend against Clemson. Speaking of Clemson. So we're going to jump into that. But before we get started, Michael, how are you, my friend? Thank you for joining me.
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me again, Jesse. Man, I'm excited for the spring madness, as we talked about on the Plant the Spear website, the article that just came out there. Man, it's madness season. We got college basketball, but we also got spring football practices. So we're diving in, seeing what's happening, seeing this new team, new faces. The coaching staff is back. They look very energized, excited. It's going to be a great, you know, couple, 14 practices or something. Like that. And then the spring game. So excited to see how this team grows. Excited to see who starts to stand out, who becomes, you know, potential portal candidates, all those things. Man, spring madness is here.
I know, it's crazy how content flow works in this business. It's like for a minute, we're turning over rocks and opening all the empty, dusty books to look for something to talk about. And then it's like the fire hose opens and you just got like, this could be a 2-hour show if we wanted to. But so anyway, with that being said, being that we have so much to talk about, let's just go ahead and jump in. First topic that we got on hand is Clemson jumps in. They enter the chat of this ACC lawsuit. And there's a couple of interesting tidbits. We're not, again, for the 100th time, we are not lawyers. This is not legal advice or anything like that. We're just going to kind of give a couple of quick thoughts on what this means as it pertains to Florida State. So they first, I should mention that they filed theirs in South Carolina, their home state. So now we have a trifecta going on here. You have lawsuits in North Carolina, in South Carolina, and in Florida. Now, Clemson, from what everybody has said, has been working in the background for months, but because they don't operate under the sunshine laws like FSU has to from the state of Florida, they were able to work in the shadows. And so now it's just finally come to a head and they put it out publicly. So in this lawsuit, to me, Michael, what it sounds like is they're not necessarily, it's pretty much in the same vein as what Florida State is arguing, but kind of from a different standpoint. Now, I don't know if maybe that's because they got to stand back and watch the little bit of back and forth that the conference and Florida State has had and kind of adjust it before they send it in. But it doesn't so much seem like they're trying to argue that the GOR, the grant of rights, is basically a load of crap. It sounds like they're trying to argue that, one, the ACC owns Clemson's football media or sports media rights while they're in the ACC.
Correct.
But anything beyond that, once they get out of here, that they can't be held liable for holding their media rights and that money aspect of it. They also argue that the buyout, the exit fee for the ACC, the $140 million or something like that, is not a fair asking price.
Yeah, it's egregious.
And so, it's egregious. And so before I let you share some thoughts on this, I'm going to read an excerpt out of kind of what they, a little bit of what this lawsuit is about. So it says, this is from the Clemson lawsuit. The ACC's actions interfere with Clemson's free exercise of its rights, are fairly detrimental to Clemson's efforts to ensure that its athletic programs can continue to compete at the highest level, which is critically important to Clemson, even beyond athletics. Now, this sounds a little similar to what Florida State said. And I also want to point out, this is almost word for word what North Carolina said in a statement. Now, theirs was not in the form of a lawsuit, but that's pretty much the same exact thing North Carolina said.
Yeah.
And so one thing I think that's also interesting too, another aspect to the lawsuit, or at least in their statement, is they said, also, by the way, we're Team FSU. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And that might be where we're at right now, because they did not sign off on the lawsuit against Florida State either. And from what they said, like maybe it was some kind of legal action that they didn't need the signatures, but then they went back. And I know you got some notes on that you'll share with me. But one thing I saw that Matt Baker from the Tampa Bay Times, who we normally don't like to talk a whole lot about his stuff because he can be an FSU hater. Right, exactly. But he did say through an affidavit that they got, and this may or may not be the full list. This is just what they were able to deduce from the information that they had, was they did go in a vote for this lawsuit, and six schools they were able to confirm: Virginia, Virginia Tech, Syracuse, Duke, Wake Forest, and BC all signed off on that. Now, you know, this might be like that famous clip where it's like, you're cool, you know, or like F you, you're cool. Like, screw all those guys. But yeah, you know, three names that I think are interesting that were not listed there, and maybe it's just because they didn't have the information or whatever. There was a lot of fogginess to that release, was UNC, Clemson, and Miami.
Yep.
And those are three of the names we've heard that have kind of been tied at the hip, or at least very interested in what Florida State's doing behind the scenes to get out of the ACC. Yeah. So while I think Florida State was first, Clemson is second, I don't think Clemson's going to be last. I think you're going to see UNC and possibly Miami follow suit coming up soon. But I will say it is nice to have another member of the family in the fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, part of this is what took you so long, Clemson? You were so happy to watch Florida State get out there and get trashed and called the bane of college football and the evil empire. And Florida State is destroying the college football landscape. You know, you were happy to watch that. Wait in the shadows while you built your lawsuit and then come on out. I mean, you know. Yeah, as always, the ACC and the schools in the ACC are riding the coattails of Florida State. Now that I got that out of the way, they finally did it. And yeah, they said they were team FSU. Basically, what happened was the ACC filed suit against FSU before FSU had even declared that they were going to file a suit. You know, and I don't know, I'm assuming based off the Board of Trustees meeting, they figured that, oh, this is coming, right? And so they decided to get a head start. Well, according to the ACC bylaws, they can't file a lawsuit against any member of the school or anybody, period, without the voting consent of the ACC membership. Well, so Florida State argued that, and you know, in their legal briefing, and the ACC shot back and said, well, this is different. This is mitigating circumstances. That's a different type of lawsuit. But basically, the ACC got caught. So then the ACC went back and tried to, you know, do this vote with the schools that you listed off from, you know, Matt Baker's piece in the Tampa Bay article there. But then again, Clemson came right back out and said, actually, we didn't vote in that one either.
Right.
So who's telling the truth here? Doesn't matter necessarily. Matters that Clemson is finally in the lawsuit. And again, like you said, you know, they're arguing. I don't see it as like a different approach. I actually see it as if you look at a circle, right? If you look at a circle, Florida State's coming from this angle. Clemson's coming from this angle. Soon you're going to have another school come from this angle and probably none come from this angle. And basically it's we're watching, and dare I say, Jesse, we are watching the dismantling of the Atlantic Coast Conference from all legal angles. You know, Clemson's coming in and saying basically the grant of rights, you know, whether it's enforceable or not, that's not what we're going to argue. What we're going to argue is whether it's enforceable or not. Once we leave the conference, the conference doesn't own our rights anymore. We are gone. And if we're gone, they can't own us anymore. It's like a couple getting divorced. When you get divorced, you have no right anymore to your spouse's things because you've already agreed on what it is you get in the divorce, right?
Right.
The ACC cannot keep Clemson or Florida State, for that matter of fact, media rights once they're out of the conference. So you have Florida State saying the grant of rights is unenforceable. It's unintentable, basically. It's the most asinine agreement ever written in college sports history, right? And TV media history. Then you have Clemson saying, regardless of if it's unenforceable or not, they can't keep it once we leave. So now you have two power arguments here. And again, we're not lawyers. We don't claim to be knowledgeable people. This is just based off of our own interpretation of what people have been saying and writing about this. But you have these two really, what I would say, powerful arguments. Now, whether or not the judge and the courts and they see them all like that, you know, that's to be determined. But honestly, Jesse, this is really going to lead towards some form of settlement. Because if you're Wake Forest, if you're Duke, if you're Virginia, if you're, you know, all the other small schools, BC and all like that, do you really want Clemson and Florida State to take this all the way to court and whoever else joins and take this to court and actually win? And they basically leave you with nothing?
Right. I think what I will say, I think what's interesting about this too, when you mention that, is I don't know that this leads to the death of the ACC, because they brought in three new members because they have the deal where they have to stay above a certain threshold. And it sounds like they, I mean, it wasn't the most headline grabbing additions by any means. They waited till a lot of the other good teams had joined other conferences and then kind of got the Pac-12 teams that were just floating in existence looking for somewhere to go. They almost like they're foreshadowing that someone is going to leave. And they knew that if Florida State found a way out, that Clemson would find a way out. And I think these lawsuits are good for each other because, you know, if Florida State's trying to shoot holes in the grant of rights, but Clemson can at least have a court show that once they leave, they don't owe that money to the ACC. They are free to take their money with them and go. I think, and then, you know, of course, they're arguing, both schools are arguing that the exit fee is BS. It's too much to compared to what the value is. If either one of these lawsuits hits, I think it benefits the other school to what they're looking for. You know, Florida State, if you can get, because Clemson's kind of trying to get that buyout nulled to zero as well.
Right.
So if you get the exit fee nulled to zero for either one, and say the grant of rights is like, okay, it still holds true, but only while you're in the ACC.
Right.
Then Florida State can kind of amend their lawsuit and say, okay, we'll take that deal. That's fine. Now we're going to go to the Big Ten or SEC or whatever it is, and we're going to go start collecting our bigger check. So I think either one winning will make sense. And I don't know that it equals the death of the conference. It just will be relegated to a basketball conference because your two biggest power brands, at least as football is concerned, which pays the bills, are going to be headed for the door. And then you don't know who's going to follow suit. Miami, UNC could follow suit as well. But another thing that was brought up that I think is interesting as well, let's just say you have two, then you get three. Maybe it's four schools that join.
Right.
How deep are the ACC pockets? How much is ESPN, who's already been shelling out a ton of money, you know, they've been kind of losing money lately, having to cut staff and all this stuff. It's not a secret.
Nope.
How deep are they willing to go? Because, I mean, lawyers aren't cheap. And this stuff, there are a lot of billable hours in this thing. And so when do they say this is costing too much money?
Right.
Look, the ACC isn't our main brand at ESPN anyway. We still have the SEC. Just give them what they want. Find out what they want to get out of here because this is costing us too much money. Because honestly, when you get into a multi-million dollar lawsuit, the cost of the legal fees, at some point you just can't bleed cash.
No. Well, yeah, and this is like a military strategy, right? When countries go to war, the one thing they do not want to do is to fight a war on multiple fronts, right? Because it's just you bleed resources. It's just too much. And so you got Florida State coming. You got Clemson coming. I even wrote down, like, who's next? It's likely going to probably be North Carolina, you know, University of North Carolina. You'll probably see somewhere form of Miami get into the mix. I mean, I would assume so, right? They're always on the coattails of everybody for the last 20 years. So they're going to drop, somebody's coattail. And then probably maybe some form of NC State, you know, to follow North Carolina, and then probably Virginia Tech. They were part of the original seven that was, you know, vetoing the addition of the additional teams coming from the Pac-12. So the ACC, at some point, you're not going to want to fight this war on multiple fronts. At some point, it's going to be cost beneficial for you to just go ahead and try to settle and get as much as you possibly can in this moment. Now, here's what I'll say back to your point about the death. Yeah, I don't mean to indicate that this is the death of the ACC, because the Big East, when Miami and Virginia Tech and Boston College, when they left, that conference died in a sense, but obviously basketball wise, it's still one of the best basketball conferences in the country.
It only died for football. Yeah,
it only died for football. And so, yes, for basketball, the ACC will live on unless Duke, which I've heard rumors that Duke might try to, the Big 12 might try to poach Duke, you know, to make it a big basketball conference, which then if Duke leaves the ACC, then it's probably
North Carolina is a massive domino because again, that you're starting to get tobacco road dominoes falling.
Exactly.
That's huge.
Yes. And here's why I'll say this. It's because there's a couple of things quickly to this dismantling. The reason what probably triggered Clemson, based on what I'm reading and hearing, what probably triggered Clemson to finally go all in is the college football structure. They just agreed to the whole payout system. Okay.
Yeah.
And we kind of talked about this in a previous episode, but basically as a recap, if you didn't watch that, go watch it. You should, it's on YouTube, but basically as a recap, the SEC and the Big Ten are going to get 29% of the revenue of the $1.3 billion revenue. That's almost $700 million, 58%, almost $700 million of revenue. It's just going directly to the SEC and the Big Ten. The ACC is getting $17.1 million. The Big 12 is getting 14. 14%. Sorry. The ACC is getting 17.1%. The Big 12 is getting 14%. That's about $400 million. So you're already behind a significant $300 million total.
Right.
And that's about $10 to $15 million per school that you're going to be already behind. That's not even including the TV revenue that's already coming,
right,
that you're already significantly behind, right? So you have that. That's one. Then two, ESPN next year, we've talked about this way early on when the lawsuit first came out. ESPN is up, the deal with the ACC is up for renewal next year. And if there is no guarantee, there has been no guarantee that ESPN is going to renew the deal. Now, if Florida State and Clemson are gone, like what
it might not happen.
It might not happen. And so if that is gone, now ESPN will come back and say, okay, yeah, we might renew with you, but it's going to be at a way lesser deal.
Right.
Then the third thing, the final evidence is this. The college football playoff in this new agreed upon distribution structure for the money, they put in a 2028, I believe it is, look-in. Yeah. And correct me on that, guys, if you're watching in the comment section, if it's earlier. But I believe it's a 2028 look-in where they will go back in and reassess the distribution model of the money based on what's happened. Oh, and don't let me forget this. If there is conference realignment during the deal, it automatically triggers a look-in the following season. So if Florida State and Clemson leaves the ACC after whatever next year, it automatically triggers them to go back in and reassess the distribution. The ACC is on life support, or will soon, at least from the football side, be on life support.
Right, and that's what we actually talked about in the 14-team episode that we did, the 14-team playoff format, is the realignment thing, the look back in 2028 that could be moved up for further conference realignment.
Right.
Which again, if you read between the lines, tells you they expect there to be more conference realignment.
Exactly.
But I think this is something that we've harped on the whole time of, one, like now you Clemson sees the writing on the wall. That's what it all boils down to.
Yeah.
The same thing that Florida State saw a few months, you know, they've been working on this for a year. So they saw this on this writing on the wall. Clemson sees it as well. We've talked about this ad nauseum where, look, I this is no disrespect to the other ACC teams, but when you look at the money that they put into their football budget, it's clear and that there's two schools that stand above the rest. And when you look at success on the field, it's clear there are two schools that stand above the rest. Those schools also have a primary rival in the SEC where they're going to be making $30 to $50 million more than you.
Correct.
They're going to have more playoff spots available than you coming up in the future. You have to recruit against them. You have to play against them. You have to answer to your boosters if you don't beat them.
That's
so
right.
It is important. And those two schools, again, like I said, this is the part where I say no disrespect to the other schools, because I'm sure they would love to win a national championship at all the schools.
Right.
When you look at the trail of resources you commit, there are two schools who play at a different level. We are just trying to, you know, get to the Tax Slayer Bowl and hopefully play in the ACC Championship once a decade. These two schools are trying to compete, you know, annually for the playoffs and the national championship.
That's right.
And so, like, if you have a situation where the playoffs are slighted against you with spots and automatic qualifiers and things like that, the revenue's going against you, the TV money's going against you, these two schools are going to get are going to find their way out. And I think UNC just knows, they're smart enough to know that if the two major brands leave, you have essentially become the Big East. You are no longer are a basketball conference. And so, you know, I think the free-for-all, once the floodgates open, that's the free-for-all, because then people are going to start looking around. Like Wake Forest, BC, and all that, they really don't have – it's musical chairs, and there's not enough chairs for everybody.
That's right. That's right.
They would probably be happy to stay. But a team like UNC and all that, they see the writing on the wall, because I think one thing to go a little bit farther down the road here is, yes, the conversation is about football, but this is something that UNC said, and Clemson kind of hinted at as well in their lawsuit, where – the money affects more than football. Yes, this is about football, but this is your Olympic sports. This is what funds Title IX, women's sports, things like that.
Right.
So they can't do what they want to do if they remain in the ACC and it falls apart. So that's going to be interesting to watch going forward if anyone else gets in. But I think both of these schools have seen the writing on the wall, and they're looking for a way out. Now, the last thing I want to read you on this is, in the lawsuit, Clemson challenges the ACC's grant of rights hinders Clemson's ability to meaningfully explore its options regarding conference membership. So, and they go on to say, without clarity as to its legal rights and obligations, Clemson cannot protect and advance its interest or the interest of its student athletes in current and ongoing negotiations within the conference. So it does kind of seem like they're saying, we can't even shop around, you know, like when, when it's time for your car insurance to come up, like, we can't even shop around for better rates because of this grant of rights. So we need to know if this is Swiss cheese or if this is ironclad.
Right.
And, you know, once they get the answer, that's going to create, that's going to either open the floodgate or you're just going to have to kind of, Florida State's going to have to go, all right, well, we're locked in. It is what it is.
Right.
But I think the more that you see jumping the boat, the more confidence that people are going to have that they can get out of this, the more likely you're going to see at a minimum the ACC come to the negotiating table to let these schools get what they want before they get too deep in the legal and before you just have an all-out, you know, chaos situation where you get enough members to just say, you know what, we're done, and we blow the whole thing up.
Right. Well, and you have to be, you have to be naive to not think that schools in the Big Ten, schools in the SEC aren't watching this. Why?
Right.
Because they all have grant of rights in their own conferences, right?
Yeah, like this is massive.
This is massive because this could reshape college media, TV negotiating as a whole thing.
Right.
And so if the courts rule that, oh yeah, well, the grant of rights is unenforceable, well, now you're gonna have schools that are now, I don't know why you might leave the SEC for the Big Ten or the Big Ten for the SEC, especially if they're making similar money. But if, let's say one day, you know, Fox, you know, because we all know who the players are, ESPN for SEC, right. Fox for Big Ten. Let's say Fox is like, they get a windfall of cash. People are tuning in more. They're distributing the product more. So now the Big Ten has, you know, $30 million over the SEC. Now you might have an SEC school might say, you know what? Well, this is unenforceable. I'm going to the Big Ten. Like, I mean, it just opens up a whole realm of possibilities there. Now, I don't think that'll ever happen. I don't think you'll ever, I don't know of a court or a judge. Remember, I'm not a legal expert, but I assume that they wouldn't just rule that these contracts are unenforceable. But I do think the idea of a $500 million media rights deal that when you leave a conference, you can't take your rights with you. What is that? No, that I think that's unintenable. I think $140 million exit fee out of a conference as a penalty is unintenable. Maryland proved this when they sued to get out of the ACC to go to the Big Ten. And I think a judge is going to rule this again. I think if this gets all the way to court, the ACC is in danger of losing their argument. So they might as well just settle. I mean, and try to meet Clemson and Florida State at least somewhere halfway where they're maybe paying, you know, $140, $150 million. And that's it. Like if you told FSU and Clemson today, all you got to pay is $140 million. You get your rights. You're out.
Yep.
Oh, we're gone yesterday. Our bags are already packed. We got SEC, Big Ten all over them. We're saying, hey, boys, we're coming and moving in.
Right.
That's where the ACC just look. Boston College, Wake Forest, you guys, man, just get your money. Don't be like the Pac-12 and hold on until like you have nothing left and now you're just nothing.
Right. And I think they need to take that as an example. And I think that kind of goes back to like what I was saying a second ago, where in a way it's like, okay, so what do you do? Do you fight this tooth and nail to the end and risk losing everything? Or do you just let a couple of members that aren't happy that don't want to sit around and you know, kind of get the free lunch, you just let them go? Like, okay, Clemson, UNC, Florida State, Miami, like you guys want to go, bye. We brought in three teams. We'll find another team to add if a fourth team leaves or whatever. But we're going to salvage the conference even if it's a basketball conference or whatever. You just let them go. So it's interesting, man. Like you said, this could be almost like ground-shaking type of stuff here because, you know, just like an example, what you're saying with the SEC, no one has a reason to leave the SEC. But what if, say, Texas A&M's like, you promised us we were going to be the only Texas school. Now you brought in Texas. Now we're pissed off. The Big Ten's paying more. We want to leave. Well, it just gives them the option to do so. So it's interesting, man. I can't wait to see how it shakes out. But I like having someone else in the room arguing with you. And I think now you're going to see, now that you've seen two, now that you've seen a Carolina school, a ACC blue blood, so to speak, someone who's been a conference member from the beginning, enter the chat, you could see Florida State's not necessarily the bad guy anymore, which I'm happy because, you know, ACC Media Days is coming up. I was hoping to go to that. I was like, man, it's going to be super awkward when we walk in there and everybody's going to be like, oh, Florida State, huh?
Yeah.
You got to sit in the back, buddy. And then, like, you're just ready. I got a question. And they're just like, nope. But if you have Clemson in there too, man, then at least we're not, you know, we're not the only evil member, right, so to speak.
You think they'll put Clemson and Florida State media in like a little corner somewhere? And right, say,
we're going to be in a bathroom watching on a, like a little 13-inch TV or whatever. They're not going to give us any chance to ask questions or anything. It's going to be ACC media days is going to be extremely interesting this year. The tension is just going to be so thick. I can't wait to see how this plays out, but I think it's a good thing to have Florida State have another player in the argument, and I think it's going to help us get out of here. So
that's sure.
pretty much the updates for now on Clemson entering the lawsuit with Florida State. You know, well, it's their own separate, but they're in the same conversation with Florida State. And so with that being said, we will transition into spring football. Let's go ahead and talk about day one of camp coming out. But Michael, you know, before that, something that you don't have to worry about any headaches with or anybody joining you, something that you can always rely on to be there for you, and that's Alumni Hall FSU, the sponsor of today's episode. Anytime you need FSU gear, from baseball to softball to basketball to football, all the sports, they have all kinds of cool gifts, gear, everything a Seminole fan would love. You guys make sure you go check them out at their location in Tallahassee, 1415 Timberlane Road, or online, Alumni Hall. Navigate over to the FSU page. They have a few other schools in there, too. If you have a relative maybe you want to send a gift to or something like that, they have a Clemson site. You can mail your Clemson friend a shirt and say, hey, thanks for joining the lawsuit. Either way, you're going
to
get
welcome to the party.
Right, exactly. You can send them a welcoming gift. You're going to get 10% off by using code SPEAR. So make sure you check those guys out, and we appreciate you for supporting those that support us. So let's get into some spring notes here. Now, I want to start with a little bit of news up front that we're not going to call news, okay?
Okay.
We're just going to kind of give you the tea leaves and let you take from this what you can. So FSU great Ernie Sims, former linebacker from 03 to 06, first-round NFL draft pick in 2006, just the ultimate dude.
Ultimate dude.
Was at camp yesterday in FSU gear. Okay, mm-hmm. So now I just want to say that he has stops previously at FAU in a more of an off-the-field role. I think he was actually director of player development there at one point. He spent a few years at USF, and now most recently was the linebackers coach at Central Florida. All I'm going to say is this. I think this would be a great addition to the off-the-field staff, which is what the rumors are, and I'm not going to say that they're anything more than rumors, because that's all we can confirm right now, that it is rumors. I will say that Mike Norvell was asked about it in a press conference yesterday and kind of said he couldn't talk about it, so you that's can right. take what you want from that. That obviously kind of means you should read between the lines there, but again, I can't confirm or deny any of that, but there is some smoke that Ernie Sims may be joining FSU staff in an off-the-field role, which I think would be huge if it does happen, because one, you have a guy who was an elite player at the linebacker position who can come in and, you know, I don't know, maybe he's your future linebacker coach. It's hard to say, but you also have a guy who has experience in the NFL and has now coached for the last, I think, around 5 to 6 years in the state of Florida, which gives you those connections. So if it happens, and I can't say that it will, I'm a big fan of this. I think this would be a great move as an off-the-field position who potentially could transition into on the field, but we'll see.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. There's a difference between what we call scoop, which is like, oh, this news is breaking, and scuttlebutt, which is like, here's what we're hearing, right?
Right.
So this is scuttlebutt. You know, we saw him at practice. There's video of him out there. There's also video of him with the practice schedule holding, and you know, only the coaches have that. And so again, regardless of what capacity he's in, and again, we're not saying anything, we're not breaking any news or anything like that. All we're just talking about is what we saw. We saw Ernie Sims at practice hanging out there. Regardless of what capacity he was there for, man, he's just a great presence to be there. I mean, great all-time FSU linebacker. You know, he played for Coach Bowden during, you know, what we call the lost decade, but still, he was really great during his time there.
Right.
He has coaching acumen, successful coach, and just like wisdom to bring to that linebacker room, to bring to the defense, to bring to the team as a whole. And I know that I would imagine that Mike Norvell, you know, wants him there, likes him there, invited him to be there. So whatever the capacity is, it's great having Ernie Sims there. Now, if that translates to something off the field on staff or on the field on staff, we here at Plant the Spear would be all for it. That's all we're going to say.
Right. And remember, Randy Shannon started kind of off the field.
That's right.
And then worked his way on when Marv left for Virginia Tech. So
that's right.
We'll see. I think if nothing else, it helps with recruiting at the linebacker position, which is something that we need. And I also like that he's a former Noel. I mean, you've seen some of the off-the-field hires.
That's right.
If this pans out, that's a former FSU player. Then you bring in Rick Stockstill, a former Noel himself as well.
That's right.
So I like that you're bringing in people who are Noel-blooded that want to be here. And that's just exciting. So we'll see how that plays out. The school has not released anything yet, but we'll let you know if they do. So the next thing I want to talk about as far as spring goes is Mike Norvell had some comments in his pre-spring press conference that I just want to touch on, and then we'll get into some of the things that we saw through watching film and practice reports and all that. But some of the highlights from the pre-spring coach interview with Coach Norvell that I thought was interesting to touch on was, first off, he said that the strength numbers have gone up from last year, bench, squat, things like that. So this team is, again, getting bigger and stronger, which we like as you know, to see as FSU fans, because we know how good Coach Storms and that staff is. I think one of the other things that really stood out was he said this is probably the fastest team that they've had during his entire time at FSU. Now, that's not a surprise to everyone who follows closely when you look at the speed that they brought in. So I think, man, that is huge. And there's a couple of guys that I want to talk about when in relation to speed that I was going to kind of save for the spring notes, but I'll just at least touch on a few of them right here. I mean, you got guys like Malik Benson, who was fast to begin with. You knew that. You're seeing it now play out in practice. I think the Jalen Lucas kid is as advertised. Like, I just seeing him move, working at kick returns and all that stuff, man, I mean, you are seeing someone who is absolutely just has next-level speed, quickness, and change of direction. So we'll talk about that as well. But you see where that speed's coming from. You can see that that's something that Florida State has really built success on in the past, is having an insane level of team speed. And I think they're really getting to that number now. Some of the other things that stood out to me, and this is something that he said, that he wasn't sure of these exact numbers, so we're going to say a maybe on this. Florida State was one of maybe five teams in the country that returned all 10 position coaches and the head coach. And I think that's big, man. They're in a world of constant change where you know, there's always somebody moving. There's always moving pieces. And you know, we almost lost the head coach there for a second. Just seeing the continuity, especially when it's on a team that just had the season that they had, that has turned around this program from where it came from, to have all those guys still locked in the boat, you know, in the process, to have all 10 guys plus the head coach, I think that's huge. I think it helps you not have to, you know, adjust for new coaches and new processes and things like that. You can just kind of hit the ground running with what you already have.
That's right.
And I think the reason that is important is another comment that kind of stood out to me as well is, there is a lot of install, and this is something that came out in the practice notes too. There's a lot of install that has to be done because they have a lot of new pieces, especially on this offense. But they're going to push them this spring.
Yes,
and they said that, you know, they want to make it uncomfortable for guys like DJ and some of these guys to learn on the fly. Because he did also comment that Brock missed a lot of practice time last year. We know he had the injury, and then he got thrust into duty with Jordan's injury and Tate going down with the concussion. But to me, with the Brock comments, he says, you know, Brock is coming along. He's doing well, but it makes it sound like this is DJU's job to lose. So they have to push him to get ready for the season. So I think when you already have a lot of new players to install stuff with, it's nice to have continuity among the coaching staff. So they're all familiar. You don't have to get your coaches on the same page as well. So that's interesting. Those are kind of really what I took away from Mike Norvell's press conference. Now, he did say they would fill us in later on some guys who would miss portions or of spring. So we're waiting to see that. There was a couple players that I didn't see on film that I'll talk about in a second here. But those are some of the main comments. I know there was one other that you wanted to talk about. I made a fun little caption with it, a fun little post on Instagram. If you haven't checked it out, check it out. I think it's funny. Look, man, it's talking about some of the portal players, and I'll let you share the comment. But we just talked about Mike Norvell's hit rate in the portal. And we did a self-calculation here. It was at like 85% in 2022. It was at, I think, 92% in 2023. It could be even higher in that ballpark in 2024. Look, people, and I said this in the post on social media when I made the fun little caption out of it, people like to hate on Mike Norvell's process.
Yep.
People love to dog it. I just literally had a social media exchange with a Miami fan, which I know it's like arguing with a crumbling wall at that, about, look, man, you have to respect the process. You have to respect looking at his track record. He has the right to make comments like this. He has the right to applaud his own process because that's it right. works. Whether right. you like it or not, this is modern college football, and they are still developing these transfers. They are still bringing in guys who are making a big impact. So whether you like the process or not, you got to respect it. You know what I mean?
That's
like
right.
you don't have to like the player, but you got to respect his game.
That's and right. So
I'll let you share some thoughts on the fun comments that he made.
Yeah, you know, I thought, you know, he was very, very confident, but humble at the same time of like, hey, you know, this has been, I think he said this is the best tour of duty he's had, you know, he's been a part of scene since his time at Florida State. So it's only continuing to get better. And there was a, as you alluded to, there was a question from a reporter about, you know, just the I think it was the success of the transfer portal. And he said, and I'm not going to get the quote fully right, but basically it was, you know, people talk about, you know, you want to talk about all the numbers that people get, you know, people can go get a lot of transfer portal players, but they talk about us because of how good they turn out to be. Now that's Michael Hinton quoting Mike Norvell, but basically in some vein, he was like, yeah, you can go out and get all the transfer portals players you want. But like the reason why they're talking about Florida State is because look at how our transfer portal players turn out to be. Look what's happening in the NFL combine. Look what we've done over consistency over the last couple of years, where we've taken portal players, and for the most part, the hit rate has been extremely successful, and we've put them in the NFL. You know, to the Miami fan you were arguing with that said, oh, he can't develop talent. I mean, tell me a program that brings a player in 1 year who may have had a decent, okay year, maybe not, and then turned him into a superstar. Johnny Wilson, Jared Verse, I mean, Jermaine Johnson. I mean, we keep going down the line.
Right.
You know, Braden Fisk. Like, I mean, what else? Keon Coleman. Like, we keep going. Jaheim Bell, like, over and over again. And so it shows – I actually love this, you know, swagger. I love the swagger yeah. that Mike Norvell showed. And I love that – they were asking about, one of the reporters asked a question about, you know, the ratio of high school to transfer portal candidates. And Mike Norvell said, you know, that what they have is about 65% high school and 35% portal kids, which is still, again, to all those people out there who are saying, oh, well, they only do the portal, blah, blah, blah. No, they're still recruiting at a high school level. And their recruiting at the high school level is getting better every year over and over. And you're going to start seeing the development. I mean, we're going to see Hakeem Williams is probably going to be a featured wide receiver this year. We heard the name Vanjavious Jacobs. Like, oh yeah. My gosh. Like, he's come back from the dead, apparently. Right. We're going to see Destiny Hill. We're going to see a lot of these high school players begin to develop and show themselves. And so it's not just, you know, Florida State is the portal destination, though it is, and we're the king of the portal. We're also going to start seeing these high school players develop and be used and leverage in high impact situations. And so I just thought that I love that comment. I love that Mike Norvell was like, no, let me shoot it back to you. It's not that we're taking every single portal player. It's that we're taking the right portal players, which means they've had to turn down. Think about this, Jesse. They've had to turn down other portal players, Cam Ward, and say, you know what? You're not going to fit here. Sorry, we're going to go after this person. And they've been right. What did we say? 95% of the time?
Yeah. And I mean, a savage Mike coming out. And I love it because I think he's got his, it's like he's kind of got a swag back. You know, he took a lot of flack early on from the stuff that he was dealing with, and people don't understand. A lot of people don't understand just the uphill battle that he had. But now that he's got some success, you kind of see that, and he's earned the right. And you know, the exact quote was, I pulled it up because I had a screenshot here. There are plenty of players who take more plenty of people who take more transfers than us. They point to ours because ours are good.
Right.
And exactly, ooh, man. And the thing is still, like, the argument that we had, and I won't spend too much time on this, but the argument that I had with the Miami fan was just about how he has to go to the portal because he can't develop people. And that's a right. false narrative, because not every portal player who comes in is a plug and play starter. They that's are right. potentially have some college development under their belt, but that doesn't mean everyone who comes in is going to be a Keon Coleman. That's I mean, right. Johnny Wilson went from 237 yards at Arizona State to 990 something or whatever, like 700 or 900 yards in his first year. Trey Benson went from two knee surgeries to a 900 yard back.
That's right.
Like, you know, right. you just go down the line. Not every player is a multi-year project, and not correct. Every transfer is a day one starter. So they still right. develop these guys. They still have more than 1 year with a lot of these guys. And there's also plenty that you can point to from the high school ranks. And, you know, I mean, Jordan Travis is a great example of yes. a portal prospect because he stayed so long and he came so early in his career, it almost feels like he was a high school recruit.
Right.
But, you know, someone, the guy had said, and I had to laugh at this. I was like, golly, this comment was dumb even for a Miami fan. he didn't get credit for developing Jordan Travis. I'm like, are you even talking about?
Are you kidding me?
The dude wanted to play wide receiver 3 years ago and now he finished.
And then he wanted to quit.
And then he was fifth in Heisman voting, even though he got injured. Like, of course he gets credit for that. That's the most insane thing I've ever heard. But again, you know, there's plenty of high school prospects. Josh Farmer is a guy that we're going to talk about in a little bit. The guy came in as basically a skinny linebacker and is now an absolute animal. AZ Thomas, who looks like he might be one of the best DBs in the country. That's a high school recruit. So there are plenty of examples of high school guys that are being developed under the staff, but they can still develop portal players. And that's why I even replied in there. I said, you saw in the press conferences of a lot of these players, they come in and they say, I want to be at Florida State because I saw how they developed the other players, the other transfers. I know the Loholeha Sione, he was one that said, like, I saw what they did with these guys. I want that too. And that's another reason why Alabama was going to bring him in. So I'm like, look, man, you can say what you want on a social media comment, but I'm going to go with what Alabama was hunting coach. And what other players who committed to this program had to say. So to me, that is very, it's fun to see him, you know, kind of getting in his groove now to kind of get that as well. Yep. So I love it. The only other comment before we get into some spring stuff here as well, just some of the stuff from day one is there was a comment with Patrick Surtain talking about AZ Thomas, how he feels like he has the potential to be an All-American, All-Conference type of player. Again, I'm super high on AZ Thomas. He was my breakout player for the year on defense this year. I think that he is really going to be special. I think he's going to be the next great DB to come out of Florida State. It's encouraging to see that development, especially with a coach like Patrick Surtain. And I think something else that is going to play out through spring, and I have some notes on this as well, so I'm kind of bouncing around a little bit here, but just while we're on the subject of AZ Thomas, one thing that makes me most excited is just seeing the battle between him and Malik Benson throughout spring and summer and into fall. I mean, that's iron sharpens iron. That is going to make those two guys so much better. So I'm really excited about that. But furthering into our spring conversation here, I think the first thing we'll touch on just real quick is that coming up this weekend, depending on when you're listening to this, it is now March the 20th. So coming up into this next weekend is Florida State's biggest recruiting weekend of the spring. It's called Legacy Weekend. And why I love this, Michael, is you bring in a lot of recruits who you're looking to add to the boat. Some of them are already committed. Some of them are you're looking to maybe make some headway with them. But you bring them in around a host of former players that are there to sing your praise. It's one thing for a coach to tell you, this is what I can do, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It's another thing to have a player tell you, you know, maybe off to the side in a different conversation away from everybody, like, look, I came in, this is what they did for me. This is what they can do for you. I believe in them. I trust them. We've heard before that, like, Jermaine Johnson was a big part of getting Jared Verse. Now Jared Verse can be a big part. You know, it snowballs.
Yep.
And so that is interesting. Florida State is looking to bring in over 30 top recruits from the 25 to 26 class. Looking at a list that 247 put out so far, they have over 20 blue chip players that are expected to be on campus this weekend. You have quarterback Tramiel Jones, who is already committed to Florida State. You have some of the names that highlight the class, running back Alvin Henderson. You have five-star Caleb Cunningham, the receiver, five-star receiver Jamie French, five-star edge Jared Smith. So you have a lot of really, really big names. Now, whether they land some commitments this weekend, we'll see. But I think it's a great mix of having new and old on there, which is also, and I'll kick it back to you on this, but which is another thing that I loved about the first spring practice as we get ready to kind of transition into that, is there's a lot of former players that have been at these practices.
Yeah.
You know, the Jared Verses, the Jerrion Jones, and all the Akeem Dent, all these guys, and they're not just standing around.
Right.
You know, they're running out on the field and they're talking to these other players. They're helping coach them up, man. It pisses me off when you look at the end of last year. And I know even in the transfers thing, you got the freaking mindless 63-3 comments, whatever. Mm. Like, how'd they work out in the bowl game? Well, they weren't there. So obviously, but at the same time, it's like, it just speaks to the culture that they're building. Yeah, and absolutely. No matter what uninformed people from the outside say about this culture, they're building a winning culture here. And absolutely. I like that these guys are around. You got Pro Day coming up, so they want to be around for that. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, they already did the combine, so they maybe don't need to do the Pro Day, but you're going to have it's just the former player support that's coming back around that I love. But man, big recruiting weekend as we develop through spring, and a lot of former players are going to be back, and it's going to be great to see. It's going to be a great mix and set up to get some momentum on the recruiting trail.
Yeah. I wrote about this in the article called The Climb on the Plant the Spear website. But this idea that, you know, Mike Norvell, from the very moment, brought in this culture that was going to change the program. And you've seen it over and over again every year. And it's culminating in these players, these former players who are now coming back, and not just coming back and, like you said, standing on the sidelines, looking cool for the video and stuff like that. Like, oh, look, I'm supporting my university. They're literally out there coaching. There was one instance I read about where something was going wrong with the DBs. They weren't playing a defense structure right. And these former players went over there and pulled them aside and brought them in and said, no, this is how you've got to play it. This is how you got to do it. Was literally showing them how to run this play, how to do the backpedal, how to do all of that. I mean, man, that is addictive culture. That is what you want to be around. That these former players who are off in the NFL doing their careers, literally, they talked about how Jermaine Johnson, okay, this is, you know, first round draft pick for the Jets. In his offseason, you know where he's at? He's in Tallahassee working out, because that's where he feels encouraged. He feels bought in. He feels like he can grow from being around the program, even when he's no longer playing for them. I mean, this is a guy that went to Georgia and he comes back to Florida State all the time. And so this is real. And so my point of this is saying, when you bring in the Legacy Weekend, they're going to get to see this is not just for show. Like, this doesn't just happen because you're all here. This happens all the time. And if you come be a part of Florida State, you know, to steal a term from Duke, you know, there's not a lot to steal from them, but they talk about the brotherhood in their basketball program. Kentucky talks about that in their basketball program. This idea of the La Familia, that once you join the Florida State family, man, you are seminal for life. You're noble blooded, right? As we say. And so to be able to come on this weekend, I mean, they could have chosen to go anywhere else.
Yeah.
These top 30 players. And they're going to be at Florida State. Now, again, it doesn't mean we're going to hit on all of them. Would love to, but it doesn't mean we're going to get all of them. Right. But we're going to get some of them, and it's going to be because they're going to see this culture, and they're going to be able to say, man, I want to be a part of that. Because here's the thing. I'll throw this back to you is this. I love this saying, but when you come to Florida State, like, Mike Norvell can't hide you. And what I mean by that is, if you're not a dog, if you're not willing to put in the work, if you're not willing to push yourself beyond measure, if you're not willing to climb, you're going to come here, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb, because the culture is so different than it was 5 years ago, right? Where you had a bunch of loafers, you had a bunch of five-star people who just expected the win and did whatever, that we're signing contracts of saying, we're not going to quit stuff. Now it's like, you come and you're expecting that, you're going to be gone, because you're going to get recruited over, first of all, and you're basically going to be alienated by your teammates, because it's like, hey, look, you're not putting all in the effort like we are, right?
Right.
And so they can't hide you at Florida State. So I love this weekend, because they're going to get to see what a real, true college football program should look like and be like, and a program that's on the climb, that eventually, hopefully next season, or maybe in the next couple of seasons, will win a national championship, and they get to be a part of that.
Right. And you're also doing, like you said, you're interacting and being coached up by players who did it at a high level, players who are in the NFL or aspiring to be in the NFL or won a lot of games. You're seeing that culture being built. You're seeing that standard being defined, where, you know, everybody talks about the Bama standard.
Yeah.
You're seeing things like that being implemented at Florida State. Now, like you said, no one wants to be the guy that makes the team run after practice or does the drill again. So the level of accountability, the depth of talent now is making where the competition will weed out the weak ones, because
that's right.
You know, they got some dudes now. And so it's really impressive where they've the wins on the field has been impressive.
Yes, of course.
The standard and the culture transformation is equally, if not more impressive since Mike Norvell has been here, especially with how bad it started with the things that happened. We won't rehash that, but it's going to be huge to see all these guys be back around the program. I love anytime you get former players around. I think it just speaks to, you know, the culture again, and having them be a part of the program to pay homage to guys that helped build this thing. So it's going to be big, man.
And let me say this real quick, Jesse, because I think this needs to be acknowledged, because I think this is like underseeded and it doesn't get acknowledged much. But a lot of kudos, yes, goes to Mike Norvell and that coaching staff because they had to do a lot of heavy lifting. But some of the credit needs to go to Michael Alford and this administration because they invested so much money into not only first getting Mike Norvell and this coaching staff here and then giving them the resources. But then again, this is how much Bama wanted Mike Norvell, right? This is why they wanted him because they saw what he was able to do. They wanted to maintain what Nick Saban did at Alabama. So they were willing to spend the money. So kudos to Michael Alford and this administration, you know, President McCullough, the board of trustees, all of those for actually saying, no, 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 we're not going to let you take Mike Norvell because we are building our own dynasty, hopefully here at Florida State.
Right. And I think in that same vein, one, that speaks to when you bring all 10 of your assistants back.
Yep.
And more than anything, well, obviously you have the facilities and stuff that help add to things too, that they have been willing to put Florida State on the forefront of college football. So they get a tip of the cap for there. But I think when you rewind too, we focus on they fended off Alabama. But AD Michael Alford and them, you also have to remember back about 2021, you know, he took a lot of arrows to
That's true.
Stand by his decision to bring in Mike Norvell, and keep him as a coach because a lot of people were questioning what we were doing.
That's right.
And it was like, no, we see that this is he's working on getting it right. He is going to resurrect this program and we're going to stand by him. Just believe in him, believe in the process. So they get a lot of credit for not only fending him off from Alabama when we got good,
but
also having the insight to stick with him when things
weren't good. That's a good point. That's such a good point.
And so like, not only do you feel good about where the head coaching and the coaching aspect is at, but you also feel really, really good about the administration of program and the direction that Florida State is headed. So with that being said, let's talk about just a few quick, we'll kind of pick up the pace a little bit here on some of the things that stood out just through watching. Of course, there, you know, there's only about 10, 15 minutes of footage that gets put out. You can read some takeaways. They're in shells. They're not hitting yet. So there's really nothing that you can take away as far as like your trench players and things like that. It's mostly what you see in 7-on-7 and whatnot. Yeah. Some of the notes that I had is, first off, this isn't really anything for 2024, but watching the offensive line warm up, man, Jaden Todd, who was kind of a bit of an afterthought for me, and Lucas Simmons are massive human beings. In a room where there's massive human beings, they stand out already. I was kind of looking up some things. You know, we're going to talk about spring gains in a second as well. Man, this offensive line has some size. I think Marvin Jones looks for real.
Yeah.
He just looks a little bit different. I hate to use this comparison because obviously, you know, we're not exactly on great terms with a team in Athens right now, but he looks like a type of player that you would see at Georgia, and he's put on some weight as well. We're gonna talk about it a little bit. AZ Thomas was a standout at practice yesterday. And that's a guy again that we talked about earlier. I think he's going to be a first team, all ACC, all American type of player there, which you really need now that Renardo Green has moved on. You need someone to lock down that other corner spot. Opposite of Fenchel Cypress. I think you've also seen some of the young corners stepping up. Quindarius Jones was a name that got mentioned. Charles Lester has been flashing in practice, even as a really young guy.
Yeah.
I touched on earlier, Jalen Lucas is as fast as quick and as quick as you can imagine. He's been working a kick return as expected. So that's going to be an electric player there. The running back room is so deep and impressive from what reports are saying that it is just, it's going to be really exciting to watch. You got home run hitters left and right. And one thing that stood out too, that I will just point out when we're going to get to the spring games, but I'll just mention it now, is Sam Singleton might be a name to watch. He went from 188 to 199. That's a 11-pound gain from a guy who already had a quick burst. That's pretty exciting to see there. Landon Thomas, your guy, they said he's he's a college ready player.
Yes, he is.
And then a couple of other ones that I want to touch on is, first up, I'm just going to go ahead and plant my flag or plant my spear right now as the president of the Malik Benson fan club. So you guys already know he's my breakout player on offense. I think he's going to be wide receiver one. I said that in the spring preview. Just every time you watch his interviews and stuff like that, I think maybe more than the player himself, I love the attitude. You get a guy that comes in, the number one JUCO player, went to Alabama. He could be as arrogant as the day is long, but he's a humble guy. He says, look, man, this is my last year of college football. I know it's a make or break year for me. I just want to work and be a teammate. And if I don't develop, this is it. I don't have a future after this. So I have to go out and earn it. And I love that. It's also hard not to to get giddy when you hear him talk about him and DJ U's connection on the long ball.
You saw his eyes light up. Oh,
right. Someone asked him about that deep ball, and he said, oh, man, it's beautiful. And not only did they say that, but like you could see in some of the clips of DJ throwing, man, he's got to learn this offense.
Yeah.
He's got a beautiful ball, man. Mm. He can sling that thing. And they said that was very evident in practice yesterday that that deep ball is just magical. And when you talk about Malik Benson, who self-proclaimed is a guy that can take the top off of defense, you add that in, that's going to be an electric combination. So, man, that's really some of the names that stood out to me just from practice reports and stuff like that without going, you know, over every single position group. And I'm going to save a few names for the spring gains because there's some things I want to comment on there as well as far as weight gains and stuff like that. But, man, I'll let you share some thoughts on who stood out from film and practice reports.
I want to echo you. If you're the president of Malik Benson's fan club, I am your vice president, because that boy is a dude. Oh my gosh, just watching just the game film that we could find out there, or the practice film that we could find out there for the first spring practice. I mean, my gosh, just fast, but like muscle and speed, and you know, like you said, when he talked about the deep ball, his eyes got big from DJ Uiagalelei. See, I've been working on it.
I got
and just exciting to see that. I also thought I thought the quarterbacks did all right. I was trying to watch them, you know. All we could see is really just them doing some drills, some throwing drills, you know, some out routes there, some sprint read action stuff. You know, they ran some just 7.70, which is just the offense running. And you know, you saw some good throws from him. I thought Brock Glenn did all right. I saw some misses there that I thought, you know, he's going to get better at. I know DJ had some misses, but we didn't get to see that as well. I heard nothing but positive on Luke Cromenhawk. You know, he's not really competing for the starting job or the backup job, but just to hear that he's progressing, because he did get to come in and practice for the bowl game practices. So just to see that development. Also, you know, if you go back and look at Luke Cromenhawk during the bowl game practice and you look at him now, my goodness.
Yeah.
Where credit needs to also go to is Coach Storms and that strength and conditioning program. My gosh. Yeah. I don't know what they're feeding these boys, but can we get some for my son? I'd like for him to grow that big too. man, gosh, darn it. I mean, those guys are just getting better. So I thought that stood out. Of course, my boy Landon Thomas, heard nothing but great things about him. I think he's going to be somebody to watch spring as well too. They say he is ready. Like body ready, and he's just got to learn the offense there. I thought that was great. Obviously, Patrick Surtain was just glowing about Azariah Thomas. I mean, just glowing. And if you watch The Climb, season 4 is out now, episode 1's out. They do this whole feature on Azariah and his brother. I thought it was really cool there. So they're starting to highlight him a little bit more. So he could definitely take over there. And then the last thing I'll give to you is this. I thought it was very interesting to hear Alex Atkins talk about the offensive lineman we've been talking about, that we've both said this is the year or this is the portal year. It's going to be one or the other, which is Julian Armello, which are going to work out at guard. And so he specifically singled him out, which means that, you know, we might have an Armello sighting again. You know, this, you know, his dad played for Florida State long ago and now he's back. And so we'll see what that pans out to be. But exciting. I thought, you know, for the first spring practice, saw some good stuff. Obviously, they're still working through. One other thing, sorry, that really stuck out to me real quick was that Mike Norvell talked a lot about the teaching aspect, because there's so many new faces here that they're having to teach a lot of this stuff over and over or again, because the last couple years you had returning players, so they're all used to this. So now they're having to teach, and they're having to go detail by detail, and that mattered, you know, here at Florida State. And so I think that's going to be something for us to watch too. So don't be surprised and shocked if you hear reports about, you know, this person struggled, that person struggled. Well, they're new to all this, and so they're all learning this for the first time.
Right. And I think when you talk about the veterans and the teachers, I think Shaheem Brown was another name that stood out at safety. He's kind of stepping into that veteran leadership role, which I think is huge, because you saw how much that paid off when you had Akeem Dent in that role last year. So I think now he knows he has to be the leader of that defense with some younger guys that are vying for positions. I like what you said, bringing up Julian Armello. They're going to start working him inside, because I think one, you got to keep the carrot in front of on the stick.
Right.
You got to keep him interested. And he really, with I think his measurables, I think his biggest complaint was kind of shorter arms. So he projected more as a guard anyway.
Yep.
But I think you're also going to see them start to use different guys at the center position, with a Richie Leonard or TJ Ferguson that might be working there as well. Not that there's anything against Maurice Smith,
no.
But you know, you just get a maybe a bigger body in there or something like that. So you're going to be able to use him inside. So again, it's just, we know they like to cross train guys. They like to have guys that can play different positions. So I think as long as you have a guy who can now step in and contribute at that, you know, whether it be guard, if he's a tackle, I think you can find a way to get him on the field. And that's what's most important. So I'm definitely excited about that. I think there was a lot of good that came out of day one. Like you said, it's just, there's some adjustment periods with a lot of new faces, but you're also going to learn a lot when they get into pads. And I believe that starts on Saturday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they got one more practice on Thursday with no pads. And I think Saturday is when they get into pads.
Right. So that's where you're really going to start to see some of the, you're going to be able to take more from, especially your trench positions and things like that, where guys get to thud a little bit right now. Oh, and I did want to touch on one thing too. Just watching the quick warm-up videos, man, don't take your eye off. I believe his name slipped me, so I'm hoping this is right. Trevor Jackson.
Oh, yeah, the quarterback.
The four-star walk-on quarterback, that dude's ball has some zip on it. Zip. I was watching him throw, and I was like, he consistently has some juice on his throw. So that may have been a really underrated pickup. So now let's touch on, we know we got the spring game coming up, but what about some spring gains? Do you even lift, bro? So I want to touch on a couple of interesting weight gains and losses here. And again, we talked about the tour of duty. You're just really trying to build that muscle and bulk up in your off-season program. And some of this weight may come back off as you stop lifting a whole lot and you're just practicing and things like that. Toa Philly up from 188 to 196. I think that's interesting because now you have the speed, you add some power. Kaziah Holmes was already a bigger back at 208, now at 215. I think he's going to be an important part as well. I already mentioned Sam Singleton up 11 pounds, almost to 200. You got some size, man. I mean, I think Roydell Williams was around 225.
Yeah.
Put on some weight too. So you have a lot of big backs, but you don't lose that speed. Landon Thomas actually dropped 10 pounds down to 235. But again, they said that just as a pass catching tight end, he looks different than everybody else in the room.
That's right.
So it may be like a Jaheim Bell. You didn't bring him in to block. If he can block, great. We'll see. Robert Scott was up to 339. Now, I don't know if that had a lot to do with he's been injured. He's still limited in spring. They said that he may not even participate in spring. Portier was another guy that I did not see mentioned anywhere or even being present. I don't know if that is from the injury that he sustained in the Orange Bowl. I'm not sure what's going on there. Richie Leonard up from 320 to 335. And this offensive line, I was telling you before the show, has some freaking meat.
Hogs, man.
Six offensive linemen who I would consider are in the kind of the top eight starting positions, not necessarily like a freshman. Six offensive linemen that are in the running for a starting position are over 320 pounds. I mean, that's some absolute road graders. I think the most notable weight change from the last season to now is Patrick Payton.
Yeah.
239 to 254. He is basically now size frame wise. Not saying he's going to equal what he did on the field, but he's almost a carbon copy of Jared Verse now. I mean, I think Verse was 6'4", 254, and now he's 6'4", 254. So you're right there. Marvin Jones Jr. put on 7 pounds. He's up to 257, which he said that Coach Storms wants to get him to that 260, 270 range. So you're getting there. Hopefully in the summer you can finish that off.
Yep.
The Dura Jai kid is 278. That's a big defensive end. I mean, just again, you look at 254 as your one defensive end, possibly 278. Daryl Jackson's 330 pounds. Jeez. Josh Farmer weighed in at 318 pounds. There's 650 pounds at two defensive tackles. Grady Kelly come in at 299. And I'll be honest, we talked about this before. I thought he was like 280, 285. Yeah. I thought he was a little light in the seat for a defensive tackle, but that's good to hear that he has size and has looked good in spring as well. They say he moves very well for his size. DJ Lundy at 240. Justin Cryer's up to 232. Nicholson put on 5 pounds at 220, so you do have some size at linebacker as well. Another guy that we touched on in the Orange Bowl that had to hit the weight room was Charles Lester. He's up so far 6 pounds now, up to 191, so that's encouraging to see because he's going to be a guy that's going to find his way onto the field.
I'm
sure about that. And then this one stood. I don't know if this is good or bad, but Devontae Brown went from 185 to 201. So like that's a pretty sizable gain. Now, I don't know what his old weight was. I don't know if that was from Miami or UCF or whatever it was. But to be up to all of our safeties are pushing 200 pounds. So you got some size on the back end as well. So
and hit power,
right? So you're just seeing that off season conditioning program from Coach Storms pay off. And man, some of these things, these weight changes are eye opening. And again, it's functional strength. These guys are. They're going to tone it down throughout practice and stuff like that. Yeah. So I'll let you share any quick thoughts you have on some of these weight gains and changes.
Yeah, like you said, it's functional strength. So as they get into practice and sweat more and work out more and the eating habits change and all those things, you'll probably see a little bit of loss in that sense, but not too much. And I think it's great. The one that sticks out to me is Pat Payton, because here's why. Now that he's the size of Jared Verse, you combine that size with he had a longer reach. His wingspan was ridiculous. That's why he was swatting down shots a lot, swatting down the passes a lot. So you imagine now with that same power that he has with that reach and him being able to get to the quarterback more, you know, that was one of the things. Like, Jared Verse was the sack guy. Payton was the knockdown the ball guy, right?
Right.
Now you get the be able to knock down the ball when you can't get there, but also reach and get to you with that power and strength.
Right.
You compare that with all the other they got along that line. My goodness.
Yeah, that's a big, 15 pounds is a big change. And I just think that defensive end room, man, is this, it almost goes like, it's going to be hard to replace Jared Verse. We said yes. It was going to be hard to replace Jermaine Johnson, and they went out that. And they got Jared Verse. Yep. So you don't know who's going to be the next guy to step up. It could be Marvin Jones, could be any one of these guys, but I think this goes back to, like we talked about with the receiver room, like, how does it get better when you lose X, Y, and Z? Yep. How do you lose Jared Verse and potentially get better? Well, you stack it full of freaking dudes.
That's right.
And then you build those dudes, you know, you chisel them out of stone. So, man, like, I am extremely excited about this defensive line unit as a whole, but that defensive end room is loaded. So, that's really the main takeaways from just the opening of spring practice. Obviously, like we said, once they get in, you know, full pads and we have a few more things to go off of, we'll update you guys with what we're seeing there as well. So as we get ready to round out the show, circling kind of back to Clemson a little bit, give me about 5 minutes of your time. I just want to talk about Florida State baseball real quick. So obviously Florida State remains undefeated, 19-0. Things are looking good. It was by the slimmest of margins, 1-0 against Stetson. But I do want to point out, this is a Stetson squad that did upset Florida.
That's right.
So at their home park. So that is, this was going to be a tough out anyway. That's I also feel like there was a little bit of look ahead to the Clemson series this weekend.
Yeah.
So they did get by Stetson. And again, these midweek games are, you kind of throw some younger pitchers at them and things like that. These aren't your weekend starters. So you didn't lose. That's right. What's important. But I will say that the one thing that has stood out recently is they hit a little better competition. And
that's right.
What was probably the hottest offense in the country in college baseball has hit a little bit of a slowdown.
Yes.
Now, thankfully, the difference between this year and last year is, even though you had a slowdown, you now have the pitching staff and defensive capacity to still win games 1-0, to still win games 4-3. You can find different ways to win the game even when you don't light the scoreboard up. Now, it's not a great time to have an offensive slowdown, because you have a top five matchup coming up this weekend against Clemson, who is currently 17-2. But, you know, still, I think a lot of that is just a product of facing better competition. When you look at Notre Dame, who doesn't have a great pitching staff, but it's still a D1 program.
That's right.
And Stetson, who is not bad as well. And, of course, you know, they already beat Florida, so they probably, this was the icing on the cake for them to try and upset Florida State. So who knows what they threw at Florida State. But you still found a way to put up 8-4-4 against Notre Dame.
That's right.
As far as runs-wise. And they did put up 12 against UF. I know that was not their weekend starters, but UF just handed previously number four, Texas A&M, their first loss of the season, and won the series. It makes you feel a lot better about that win. Now, I'm going to be honest here. We know we cannot expect Florida State to go undefeated in baseball. Baseball teams just don't go undefeated. They're not going to win every game. I think this weekend could be a situation where you see them catch that first L. Clemson, let's face it, they're a really good program. They are not number four for a reason. You have to go up there and play at their ballpark. Now, the interesting thing about Clemson is they are beatable. They lost to Kennesaw State 18-1.
Yeesh
is right. So, like, that is insane. But they still came back and they won the series. They lost to Duke, who was top 10 at the time, 5-2, still came back and won the series. That's their only two losses on the season. This is a really, really good team. Now, what I like about Florida State as it stands right now, even in an offensive slowdown, if they can get the bats going again, your pitching looks so good right now. As far as your weekend starters, you have in that Notre Dame series, Cam Leiter did give up 4 earned runs, but he had 10 Ks and 6.2 innings pitched.
That's right.
Then on Saturday, Jamie Arnold comes out and has a career high 12 strikeouts.
That's right.
And then Whitaker came out on Sunday. He did give up back-to-back home runs, but then he only allowed 3
settled
earned
down.
Runs.
Right.
6.2 innings pitched. And this staff is it's crazy how things work out, man. They like come out, they give up a giant play, a grand slam or something, and then like it's lights out from there. They shut everybody down. So they respond. They don't fold the moment, and I like that. And I also think you're starting to see your bullpen depth is being developed. You like a lot of the guys that you're bringing out, the Hudson Rowans and all these guys that you're bringing out of the bullpen. They're really – that was your kind of question mark of your pitching staff was deep that bullpen was going to be. And I think they're being able to develop these guys and get them in there. But – man, this Clemson one is huge. This is really going to be the ultimate test. I know Florida was a big test, but that was a midweek game. You didn't face their top pitchers.
That's right.
You're going to get the full slate here against Clemson. I feel like as long as you don't get swept, I think it's a success. If you get one game, you feel like, okay, we proved ourselves against a top five team. It's a long season. You can certainly keep improving. If they get two games and win the series, boy, you better watch out because Florida State is for real. Yeah. If they go up there and sweep Clemson.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm just telling you, I'm going to book my tickets to Omaha right now. But it's going to be a big challenge. But, man, I'm excited to see this one, to see it play out, because this is really your biggest gauge of the season. If you want to compete for an ACC championship, for a regional, super regional, and all that stuff, you're about to find out what it's like against the weekend starters of a top five program.
Yeah, let me just say this right up top. This is a long season. Baseball is a long season. College baseball is a long season. I've said it 3 times now. So, yes, this is an important matchup, but we can't let this matchup let us then forecast how the rest of the year is going to go. This is a long season. But like you said, Jesse, if they're able to go up to South Carolina and get 2 of 3. If they get one of the games, I'm like, okay, you know what? Growth needs to happen, but they were able to get one. Right, good on you. They get 2, man. You know, I'm booking tickets to the ACC championship. I already feel it. Right. They get all 3, they might as well name the trophy after us. I mean, I'm just saying.
I know.
But in all seriousness, though, this is going to be a true picture of kind of where this team is at this point of the season. There's still much to grow. It has implications for later on, but it really is a judgment of where they are right now, how far they've come, how much is that pitching staff that we're going to get to see on the weekend, how much of the gains they've made, how much of the bats, are they going to come back to life? Yes, the bats have slowed down a little bit. They are struggling to put hits together. But what I was more impressed of with that Stetson win was the fact that, I mean, that's 7 people come out of the pen. I mean, you know, you had Brady that went 1 1/3 inning. You had Noah went 1 2/3. You had, you know, like you mentioned, Hudson Rowan went 2 innings. And then you had Charles go 2/3 of an inning, Oxford go 2/3 of an inning, and then John Abraham, who actually got the win, went inning and 2/3, and then Carson got the save, Dorsey, went a whole inning. And you only gave up 2 hits that whole time. That was very impressive. They combined, all 7 of them combined for a shutout, which is hard to do in baseball as well, too. Right. And so 12 strikeouts as well. And so I walked away very impressed that in a game where you didn't have the bats come alive, in the game where you were struggling to put consecutive hits together, that your pitching stepped up for you. Now, against Clemson, you're going to need both pitching and the bats. So I'm hoping that, you know, Lincoln and the boys will be able to reinvigorate the hottest offense in college baseball. Don't know what's happened to it, but let's get it back going because you're going to need it this weekend for Clemson.
Right. You're not going to beat Clemson with one run. Or it's unlikely. But like you mentioned, I love the names coming out of the bullpen. Oxford, Carson, Dorsey. These are guys that have performed extremely well. Yeah. And you're going to need it this weekend in relief when your starters come out. But you're going to have Cam Leiter, Jamie Arnold, and That's Connor right. Whitaker. They're going to have to throw lights out. And you're going to have to get the bats back hot. Yeah. You're going to have to get out of a little bit of a slump. Again, I still think a lot of it was looking ahead. I mean, for goodness sakes, crazy things happen in midweeks. Look at Florida.
They
just lost to Jacksonville last night. So that's, you know, hey. Good on you, Florida.
Good on you.
Way to go.
But and here's the thing I'll say real quick is that You cannot start off like you started off with Notre Dame. You can't give up a couple home runs and right. think you're just going to get yourself back into it. This is the fourth best team in the country. Their pitching is going to try to prevent you from doing that. And so you need to get off to a good start. You need to be able to start to, you know, a couple clean innings from the pitching standpoint yeah. and then put some runs on them so that then they feel the pressure and not you.
Right. Right. You want to put the pressure on them because you're also in their ballpark. And if that's momentum right. gets their way, and that's something that you saw a little bit last year when the wall started closing in, they just that's collapsed. Right. And you want to see them be able to go into a battle like that and fight through no matter what. That's like we saw with the football team. It's sometimes right. it'd be like, oh God, what's happening? But then you knew in the second half we're on you.
That's so right.
And Clemson is man, they've been good. They struggled a little bit, but then they kind of come back. But the way it's looking right now, Wake Forest is struggling more than I thought they would this season. You know, Clemson just won the series against Duke. Miami's kind of having a down year. I just think when you look across your ACC schedule, which was really tough in the beginning, this is probably the best team you're going to play out of the ACC all season. Yeah. I mean, initially I would have said it's Wake Forest, but it's looking like it's going to be Clemson now. So this is really going to set the tone. It was good for you to get a sweep and go 3-0 in ACC play to start the conference as part of your schedule. This is really going to be a measuring stick to let you know where you're at as far as competing for the top, because in the same vein that I mentioned, some of these teams aren't having quite the year that you thought in the ACC. That opens the door for Florida State if they do continue this hot run. So, you know, this is going to be one where you're going to find out. But like you said, I don't think if you go up there and you go 1-2 or something like that, it's concerning if you get swept. But if you go 1-2 or something like that, I don't think it's cause for concern as long as they're close. You don't just get, you know, wiped the mat with or anything like that. But I definitely think this is big because if you show that you can compete with Clemson, maybe you get the series, maybe you get 1 out of 2 and the other two are really hard fought wins, you or losses, you feel like you could probably knock off a majority of your ACC schedule outside of like Wake Forest and Duke will be tough, but I feel like you're manageable everywhere else. So this is a big one, man. This is absolutely huge. It's pretty cool, though, that like Clemson and Florida State, not only are we cohorts in the lawsuit, we're the two best football schools. It looks like we're now the two of the best baseball schools. That's the marquee matchup. So, man, Jim Phillips has to just be somewhere cursing somebody in a dark corner like, damn you, why do they got to be good at everything? You know what I mean? Like the ones who are trying to tear you down, you just have to kind of celebrate their success.
Jim Phillips is somewhere in the corner going, look at our lacrosse. That's what we put on the ACC network. The lacrosse, they look so good. Does it? Exactly. Don't mind Florida State and Clemson. Look at our lacrosse programs.
Exactly. Look at the rowing team for Stanford here. You know, they just got to hate it. Like imagine next year if it is Clemson and Florida State and the ACC championship and like Clemson baseball and Florida State baseball in the ACC championship, like, man, they're just going to be hating life. But it is what it is, man. But that's going to pretty much wrap it up for us here. Just excited to watch that series take place this weekend. You guys keep your eyes peeled for that. That's going to be huge. And then like we said, we'll continue to watch spring and see what we can take from that on Saturday. Like we said, huge recruiting weekend, back in full pads. There will be a lot more that we can start reading into at that point in spring practice. So as always, guys, make sure you check out Alumni Hall to get loaded up on some FSU gear. That spring game is coming sooner than you think, so you're going to want to get some fresh gear for that. Use code SPEAR to get 10% off. And again, guys, stay connected with us on social media. Check out plantthespear.com, our hub for everything that we do, providing authentic FSU coverage for you guys. If you've watched this long, drop a like and subscribe. We appreciate it. It helps us grow the channel for you guys and put out always improving and better content. So thank you so much for watching. You guys have a great weekend, and we will catch up with you guys on the next one. As always, go Noles.